another crazy, insane, shambolic week in the world of Reading Football Club, as there were unhappy birthday celebrations, a managerial sacking, or so we thought, and then a goalless draw that brought frustrations and even more worry bubbling to the surface once again. Welcome to episode 290 of the Tireless Den podcast, where we will be looking back on the last 7 days and wondering quite what on earth happens next. My name is Ollie Allen, stepping in for Mark to host this week's show, and I will not be alone in this quest for some sanity. Joining me is the Tireless Den assistant editor, Adam Jones. How's it going, Adam?
Yeah, not bad, thanks. I'm not sure if you're going to get any real sanity from me. I mean, I do support Reading Football Club after all, but it's a lot to get through, so I'm looking forward to this show.
Good. And also on this week's podcast is View from the Dolan writer and Star Board member Ben Thomas. How's it going, Ben?
Yeah, I'm good. You know it's going badly when people keep dropping the Star Board member in. Everyone I speak to is just bringing that up. So I'm all right, mate. It's buzzing for a bit of Reading FC therapy. So yeah, I'm okay.
It is turning into quite cathartic, I think, the last few weeks. Popping on here every week now to discuss, obviously, a draw yesterday. We're recording this Thursday evening, a draw on Wednesday against Peterborough, but still that elusive win. And it does feel that draw yesterday did feel a lot like a defeat, considering what we needed from the game and sort of how Reading played. But we'll get into that in just a moment. But first, a quick mention, as ever, for our sponsors, ZCZ Films. Appreciative of ever of their support, so do go and check them out. And also to all our Patreon subscribers, very, very much appreciated. To everyone who continues to donate to the podcast and the website, despite Reading struggling on the pitch, it is very much appreciated. And if you do want to go and support the podcast, as much or as little as you want per month, that's patreon.com/thetirelessend. Right then, without further ado, let's get into the recap for a crazy last 7 days.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
We'll go in chronological order, then starting last Saturday for the home game against Coventry City, obviously penciled in as the 150th birthday celebrations that were meant to be against Luton before Christmas, but then COVID ruled that off. So this was the closest home game to Reading's very first football match in 1872. So that was what this game was penciled in for. But as I say, very unhappy birthday celebrations. We had the protest before the game. To be fair to the club, they put an awful lot on. They had lots of events going on outside the stadium. Before the game, there was the £1,000 check giveaway to, I'm not quite sure how many fans won it in the end, but Dayong did dip into his pocket to give some money away, so make of that what you will. And there were quite a few former players invited back for the game, but I'm not sure necessarily that many of them were seen on the pitch, but there were quite a lot of them there. But it was a 3-2 defeat for Reading against Coventry on Saturday. And again, we won't talk too much about this game because a lot has happened since then. But Ben, it was just sort of I think for me, it sort of summed up everything wrong with Reading this season. Everything came together at once. We again lost after taking the lead. Again, we conceded just before halftime and just after halftime, which is exactly what happened against Bristol City the previous Wednesday. Once again, it was a set-piece goal. Reading have conceded 16 goals from set-pieces now this season, the most in the Championship. Junior Hoylett got sent off, which was actually the first red card of Darko Panic's tenure, which is quite interesting. But two yellow cards in the space of 6 minutes. And then the Coventry scored 2 minutes later. And yeah, say 18 points dropped from winning positions now. Only Stoke and Bristol City have dropped more points from winning positions in the Championship this season. And obviously then we had the fans on the pitch after the game that sparked a lot of debate and anger amongst some and pride amongst others. But Ben, it was just a dreadful afternoon on what should have been a great occasion for the club.
Yeah, it was horrible all round, really. I can't honestly say that I was looking forward to the game in the morning or the build-up in the week anyway. Obviously I wrote a piece beforehand. You wrote a piece as well, Ollie. Adam did some sort of rubbish match preview, which no one read, I'm sure, as per usual. But, you know, we all tried to kind of put a positive spin on it and try to you know, tried to do what we could do with the situation. And the protest was kind of planned well in advance. You know, everyone knew about it. But ultimately, none of that really matters because we're not picking up points. And, you know, we could talk about all the stuff going on around it. But ultimately, we're in a situation now where it's looking increasingly difficult to pick up points. The players don't seem capable or want to be capable of picking up those points. There was quite clearly mental fragility. You know, the support in the stadium the game was brilliant. I thought it was absolutely first class considering the position we're in. You know, it was nice to see, I say, a full house, because it was nowhere near a full house, but a semi-full house, you know, at the Select Carl Eason Stadium. But it was just very disappointing again on the pitch. And, you know, I'm Hoylett's biggest fan, as everyone knows, but it was just disastrous, you know, to do that. It was just absolutely mindless after his first yellow. And they were both yellows, of course they were. You can't argue with that. It's good refereeing to pick him up so quickly and send him off. But you just knew once he went that there was no way back. If we weren't going to do it with 11 men on the pitch, it's going to make it even more difficult with the 10. And, you know, the longer this goes on, it becomes a habit. You know, losing is a very hard habit to shake, and nothing is kind of going for us at the moment. Masters of our own downfall, as you said, with the set piece goals. You know, I thought we did quite well up until we scored, ironically, and then nothing really happened from there. And it becomes very, very frustrating. It's very, very desperate at the moment. And that performance was a desperate one. Due respect to commentary, I didn't think they were brilliant, but we made them, again, as we've done time and time again this season, look very, very good. You know, the thing that really frustrates me is our game management. You know, the basics that you would look to in a professional team, we just can't do it. That was evident last night. I know we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but we just can't manage a game. And the players, you know, seemingly can't step up or don't want to step up at the moment. And there is fundamentally, you know, no leaders in that team whatsoever that are going to drive us for, you know, sticky periods in the game. And that's led to where we are now in terms of the, you know, the winless run that we're on.
Yeah, it was Reading's eighth consecutive defeat in all competitions, so seventh in a row in the Championship, which I think only Cardiff have gone on a worse losing run in the EFL last season. Obviously, they lost eight in a row, and that led to Mick McCarthy's sacking. And we did think that it might have led to Veljko Panovic's sacking. A crazy, mad sort of 24, 48 hours from Sunday sort of through to the Peterborough game, really, to Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning. As I say, Sunday afternoon, sort of early evening, we get these sort of rumours that Veljko Panovic might be leaving his post as Reading manager. These sort of begin to sort of grow in substance throughout the evening. You sort of get more detailed reports. You get the suggestion that Michael Gilkes might take over as interim manager. And certainly there was wide expectation that Panovic's departure would be announced on Monday. We were certainly planning for that on the Dallas Den. We had a live stream ready to go and everything, and articles ready to go. Everyone seemed to be under the belief, or certainly in the media and sort of in the fan base, that the Panovic was going to go. Obviously, Tim Deller reported on BBC Radio Berkshire before the Coventry game that senior players had apparently told him after last week's defeat to Bristol City and a change in manager that the players thought that a change in manager was needed. So all of the signs really pointed towards Veljko Panovic leaving on Monday. But it was business as usual, to quote, I think, a lot of sources saying that it was business as usual at the training ground on Monday morning. Panovic took training. Michael Gilkes, who was obviously supposedly stepping up to interim manager, was at the 23s game against Derby in the afternoon. We also get the suggestion that Veljko Panovic offered to resign a couple of weeks ago, but that was reportedly rejected. Again, this is nothing concrete, that this is all just sort of speculation and rumours flying around social media, but certainly there is no smoke without fire, so to speak. I think something definitely happened, or sort of discussions happened over the weekend, that there's a lot of people to believe that Veljko Panovic was going to leave on Monday or on Sunday, but it didn't happen. And it was just, I think that just infuriated the fan base even more. It's gone beyond the point now that it's even anything to do with Paunovic. People are looking now a lot higher up. And Adam, in isolation, it was, as I say, a mad, crazy 24, 48 hours. But when you consider that it came just before what was Reading's biggest game of the season, biggest game in years, against relegation rivals Peterborough, it was just a complete shambles and the worst possible preparation for that.
Yeah, 100%. And I analysed it on Twitter. I think it was yesterday evening. There were so many reports. And as you said, there's no smoke without fire. There were so many reports that he was going to leave. I mean, I report regularly from my job from two of those people in terms of Talk Sports, Alex Crook and Peter O'Rourke as well. Those two are very reliable, especially when it comes to championship stuff. And I'm pretty sure there must have been something going on behind the scenes. You know, I mean, some would say that, you know, they use the same source or what have you. I don't think that's the case, to be honest. I think they probably would have their own source. And obviously, well, multiple people have probably told them that the same thing, that it was happening. And I've heard of whispers as well, but it's nothing concrete. And that's, yeah, that was a real frustration for me. So, I mean, you know, some would blame on speculation from journalists, but I don't think it was down to them. I think there was something in it. And, you know, this is just, yeah, it was awful. Like 24, 48 hours before the game, it just wasn't really ideal preparation. But for me, even if we changed 24 hours before, say, or, you know, even if we sacked him on the morning of the Peterborough game, I think for me, that would have been better than keeping him in charge. And I think that kind of, that proved it really on the night, because it was just a, you know, okay, we kept a clean sheet, but it was just a shambolic performance really. And there just wasn't really any sort of direction, which I think just, you know, no real direction on the pitch really in terms of what to do. And I think that sums up the whole club at the moment, unfortunately. So yeah, it was a very strange one. Everything's been strange, to be honest, about the club at the moment. Obviously, I was at the process last weekend, and I was at the protest, and you know, you could take 100 steps perhaps and you could end up at the Dodgems. It was just such a strange dynamic. Every part of Reading at the moment is just very weird. And yeah, I'm just hoping for some sort of normality or sanity.
Yeah, I mean, it was literally a circus at the Select Car Leasing Stadium last weekend with the Dodgems and all the fun and fair rides. It was literally a circus. But yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I always go back to a quote from Brian Tebreden on the Tyler Stem podcast a few years ago. He was sort of speaking about, obviously, that 16-17 season where Reading got to the playoff final. And it always sticks with me that, you know, happiness and calm and peace upstairs in the boardroom always leads to, you know, good results on the pitch, and vice versa. When there is unrest upstairs in the boardroom, then that's always going to translate to very poor form on the pitch. Ben, we come to this Peterborough game. We are not done with discussing Raka Paunovic and Dai Young and Dai Young Pang. That we will get to that in the mailbag, because there are plenty of questions on that in the mailbag. But just to focus on the Peterborough game for a minute, Ben, as I say, billed as Reading's biggest game in years against relegation rivals. Obviously, Peterborough have a game in hand over Reading. They're currently 2 points below us in the relegation zone, Reading 2 points above the relegation zone. This 0-0 draw, which obviously, as I say, stopped the run of 8 consecutive losses, was our first clean sheet since mid-October, but that does seem to be clasping at straws a little bit. There was the suggestion, not just from Reading fans, or actually probably more from other fans and sort of from pundits, that Reading were probably happier with this point than Peterborough, and certainly watching on Sky, Darren Ferguson, the Peterborough manager, was actually quite unhappy that his side didn't win the game afterwards, and they definitely sort of felt that a win would have been massive for them, and as it would have been for Reading. But was it a case that Reading got away with one here, Ben? Because actually, it was a massive chance for Reading to sort of move 5 points clear of the relegation zone, a chance to make a statement after these 8 consecutive losses against a side who are also on atrocious form. But actually, Peterborough were the better side. They had 9 shots on target, which was their highest tally in a game this season. Ultimately, were Reading lucky to get away from the Western home stadium with a point?
It's very difficult to answer that as a Reading fan, because obviously, you know, we needed to win, But as I said before the game, I don't think it makes much difference. From a mental point of view, it might, and I say might because we've just never had this kind of wind bounce this season, really. It might have made a difference for us moving forward. But you can't, as a Reading fan, you can't take out all the stuff that's going on in the background with it. You know, if you analyse it as a game of football, then yeah, we would look to be the team that kind of effectively escaped with a point. But the performance, again, was just devoid of any real effort from my point of view. I know Yeardon came out and, spoke to the fans after and said, we're trying. I don't see that. I don't see a team that's trying that. I really don't. I'm not even going to bother with the conditions because Peterborough managed it. You know, they managed to play, I say football, but, they were better on the ball than we were. You know, possession-wise, they definitely seemed to string a lot more passes than we had. I mean, watching it on TV, there was a stat kind of about 40 minutes where we'd had one touch in the first half in the opposition box. 40 minutes in a relegation decider. And we've managed to touch the ball once in their box. I'm struggling for the words to describe it because I kind of sat there watching it and it was just, without being dramatic, it was just despair. You know, it wasn't, we're playing badly or whatever. It just felt just an overwhelming sense of dread watching them because the longer the game went on, the longer you just thought, this is it now. That, you know, if we're not going to be able to perform in a game like this, with the consequences as they were, and they are consequences, with all the background stuff going on, I honestly don't think we're going to win another game this season. I really don't. You know, I said after the commentary game, if we can't do it there, in front of all those fans and the occasion so called and all the rest of it, we're not going to be able to pick up a win there. We got another bite of the cherry, last night, and we couldn't do it there either. So nothing's getting better. You know, we've got a point. So what? We stay as we are. You know, there's a massive game now for Peterborough and Derby on Saturday, and good luck to both teams. You know, I hope they crack on and do what they need to do with it, because the way we are, and I never thought I'd say this, but we deserve everything we get now in terms of league position. Those players are not, I'm sorry, but they're not trying. And I don't see that effort level, and I don't see the desire. And I kind of understand it to a point, but for some of the players to kind of go, well, we're trying, I just don't see it. And it was, for me, last night was just a real killer in terms of any enthusiasm, any optimism that I had left in me, as I'm sure other people feel the same as well. That's it now. It's gone. And I just look at it and I think, I'm not sure when we're going to win another game. And I don't even think at this stage now, because of the things that have come out this week and the way the fan base are reacting to people higher up, I just don't see those players performing now again this season, even if we change the manager. I really don't.
I think this is the thing. I think you can make the point about a change in manager. And as I said, we've got questions on that in the mailbag, which we'll get to. But as a player, take out of the equation whether you want Pavlovic as the manager or not, whether you want to play for him. Just as a player, you have to have that desire and that effort just to play for the shirt, play for the badge, play for those fans who, travelled for a midweek game that was rearranged 2 weeks ago, many of whom would have, switched around sort of work arrangements and hotels and train fares to make that game. You know, the support in the face of this adversity has been brilliant from Reading's fans, and I can't praise that enough. But for those players, take out the equation whether they're playing for Pavlovic, just play for some pride. You know, we're in a relegation battle and you're putting in that performance against Peterborough. You're making, a pretty poor Peterborough side look pretty decent and look the better side against a Reading team with, names in that squad. Danny Drinkwater, a Premier League winner, which baffles me, and an England international. You know, a lot of these players, were part of the Reading team last season that finished seventh. And this is the thing for me, Adam, that there was a lot of, I think, surprise on Sky last night, particularly with the pundits. And I think Jerry McInnes spoke about it a lot, that realistically, Peterborough came into the season having been promoted from League One last year, expecting a relegation battle. You know, one of the smallest budgets in the league. I'd imagine that their players are among the lowest salaries in the league, and they were sort of certainly geared towards a relegation battle. But they're getting the better of a Reading team with players in who are on, some of them are probably on double Peterborough's players' salaries, you know, as I say, who have had good careers, who have had experience, who, you know, all of them are seasoned championship performers. But for some reason, they are putting in these dire performances. And this Peterborough team, who, yes, aren't very good either, and we'll get onto this in a minute, but ultimately they were outplayed last night.
100%. I think for me, I think the recruitment plays a part in it. I think, you know, you look at someone like Blackburn Rovers, who, you know, that they've recruited young, hungry players that want to play for the shirt and they've got a point to prove. And, you know, Danny Drinkwater was, you know, on paper a very good addition. But, you know, he doesn't really have anything left to prove now. You know, after winning a Premier League medal, he's, you know, he's kind of, it seems like his career has declined quite a lot. And I'm not even sure if he'd get a start really in League One. Because that was a shocking performance, really. But it wasn't just him either. It was a lot of the players. I was really disappointed, actually, by Lucas Zhao as well. You know, just the lack of energy, really. I know that it's kind of his nature, but he needs to give a lot more. And I'm not sure if he's doing it to avoid an injury. But if that's the case, then surely you bring on Jamari Clark. It's just, yeah, there's just a lack of, I agree with Ben to an extent, just a lack of desire and a lack of real direction. It just seemed all a bit apathetic. And for me, yeah, that was a real disappointment. And, you know, this was a game on paper and the Sky commentator was saying it, that we should have won. But we just didn't really have that kind of oomph to get forward. And, you know, I thought that Yakimoto would provide that yesterday. Obviously, he's coming back from an injury, but you know, someone else has got to step up as well. And, you know, a lot of players and too many players, I think, failed to. I think, so Babu Rahman, I thought, was one of the bright points from last night. I thought he played reasonably well. But some of the others, you know, it was just this game was there for the taking and they didn't rise to the occasion. For me, that's a massive issue for me. And that's a real low point, really, of last night and one of the most disappointing things.
Final word then, Ben, on this Peterborough game and sort of where it leaves the relegation battle. I tweeted from TT last night that it felt an awful lot like the 0-0 draw at the end of the Premier League season in 2013, where Reading and QPR played out a 0-0 draw that obviously relegated both sides, and it felt an awful lot like that, just without the immediate consequences. And certainly, if you're Derby County watching that game, if you're Wayne Rooney watching that game, then you know you're given a massive confidence boost because you're watching two very, very poor sides that seemed destined for relegation. And, you know, obviously Barnsley at bottom of the table, they won for the first time in about 5 years last weekend. So that might give them a confidence boost. But certainly you're looking at Reading and Peterborough now, Ben, as two teams that look almost destined for relegation.
Yeah, well, a couple of weeks ago, I said on here that Barnsley had gone, you know, they're out and suddenly they've come from nowhere again because they've, you know, they've got their professional pride and they've plucked up a bit of courage and started winning games, you know. Where it leaves us is basically as we were before this week started. So, you know, obviously the conference result hasn't changed anything for us, neither has last night, even though we picked up a point. You know, the momentum is fully with Derby, and you would anticipate now that they would stay up and that us and Peterborough would go down. And I think really, you know, my feelings towards Derby have changed over the season, because before, you know, I couldn't really care less about them, thought they're quite arrogant, to be honest. But now they've overcome that massive deficit, they've pulled themselves together, they've galvanised themselves, and they've, you know, they're kind of on the up. And we are very much not. And it's shameful. It's absolutely shameful. And it, you know, we could talk about it forever, but I just run out of words to describe it. And I think that's the thing. You take all of that away, but we're potentially about to get overtaken by a team that had a massive points deduction and has had absolute turmoil off the pitch, real proper turmoil. And they've kind of been able to come out and almost take us over. You know, my predictions are, I think Derby will win on Saturday. I think they'll beat Peterborough quite easily. I think we'll lose to Preston. I think we'll lose to Birmingham. at home, and that will eventually drop us into the bottom three. We've been lucky to not be in there up until this point, but everything catches up with you eventually, and that's what, you know, I feel is going to happen at this stage.
Yeah, it certainly feels somewhat inevitable at this point, and whether a change in manager fixes that or anything else, we have got a couple of questions on that in the mailbag. But before we get into that, the final word then on the recap goes to Veljko Panovic, who is still Reading's manager. Here's what he had to say on last night's 0-0 draw against Peterborough.
I think we were very close to get all 3 points. I think in a very difficult conditions, we knew how to adapt and we knew how to manage the game. Especially difficult was the first half when the wind was blowing so hard that we couldn't manage to bring the ball in the final third. In times when we adapted to it and found a way to put the ball in behind and put pressure on their back line, we got some opportunities from set pieces. One, I think the best chance in the first half was the free kick Tom Ince executed very well and great save. And the second half, obviously now we had the wind in our favour. We wanted to put pressure in behind of their back line, which I think sometimes we rushed. Sometimes, but again, conditions were very, very difficult to play. I think also even like that, we were patient, we worked hard, we matched their desire and intensity. I think we, on that side of the game, we were excellent. We managed to keep a clean sheet after a long time. We managed also to not lose today, and with patience and hard work, we got in a situation where we could have get the whole 3 points, as I said before, in that chance by the end of the game when Lucas did everything great except the execution. But huge credit to the team for the effort and for the togetherness and the unity they and the output they showed today.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Let's get to the mailbag then. One quick question. As I say, most of them are on sort of behind the scenes in Panovic and Dai Young, but one quick question on last night's performance from Benjamin Vickers, who says, Heinz distribution, Carl Heinz, the goalkeeper, not Heinz Beans. Heinz distribution, poor or was it just windy? Carl Heinz played the last three games now. Adam, obviously, perhaps not when people wanted to see him come in for Luke Southwood. I think for me, his shot stopping is pretty good. But as Benjamin says, there are question marks over his distribution. What were your thoughts on his performance last night?
Very mixed. I mean, there was two sides to his game, really. I mean, there was the flappy side and the one where he didn't come for the cross in the second half, or did come for the cross and completely missed it. And obviously the guys had an open goal and just completely missed it. And that's, you know, one thing that we can't ignore, because and that's the type of error I think that we'd hammer Raphael for and perhaps even Southwood. So that was an error. But there was a couple of times where he bailed us out, and you know, you've also got to point that out as well. So it was very mixed. Overall, I thought he was man of the match, though. And even though he made, you know, what could have been a couple of costly mistakes, you know, what does that say about the rest of the team, really, if he was man of the match? So, fair play to the lad. I mean, you know, he's only just coming into senior football, really. So if there was anyone really that I'd want to look to step up, it wouldn't be him, really. But he did last night, you know, obviously with the tricky pitch conditions as well. You know, for a goalkeeper, it's usually an absolute nightmare. But he stepped up to the plate, I think, reasonably well. Obviously, it was mixed, but I thought he'd done, reasonably okay. So he's definitely not one of those where, well, not really one of the main ones for criticism, really. Last night, I don't think it was, his fault.
Yeah, I think ultimately we have to remember that he's a 19-year-old kid who 10 days ago hadn't played a single minute of senior football in England. So, yeah, he's ultimately got Reading's first clean sheet since October. So, yes, certainly no criticism for Carl Heine overall yesterday. Let's get into the ones behind the scenes then. Obviously, Ben, you mentioned sort of Andy Yeardon coming out to speak to the fans after the game. Again, a lot of fans waited after the game, both in the stands and then after the game around the Reading team coach to try and sort of just speak to anybody really about what was going on. And Andy Eardom, credit to him, was one of the few players that did sort of stop to try and speak to some fans. And Benjamin Vickers said, what did Yid say to the mob last night? There are a few videos out there that they're not particularly clear. I mean, I think he pretty much just sort of says, we're trying, what do you want me to do? And people are asking about Paunovic and Dai Young, and he's sort of saying, well, you know, that's all above my head, which ultimately it is. You know, the players can only, you know, go out and play for 90 minutes, and you can question whether they are trying or not. But in my view, I think fair play to Andy Eardon for coming out and to trying to mediate with fans. And Peter Taylor says, has speaking to players after a match, which continued a long losing run, ever gone well for anyone involved? And Ben, this is something I don't want to touch on sort of too much, but is there a sense that this could be detrimental to players when you are attacking sort of a team bus, not letting them, you know, leave the stadium, so to speak? And I'm loath to sort of criticise fans for this, because ultimately we have now not won in 9 games. We've lost 8 of the last 9. You know, yesterday felt like a defeat. Ultimately, I've sort of reached a point where fans can do what they want. Obviously, not within boundaries, but, you know, I understand people are angry now. You know, people have got every single right to be angry, and this is them venting their anger last night. I do worry that it's perhaps detrimental to attack the team bus, but ultimately that there are not an awful lot of excuses you can make.
Well, I mean, the point is, you know, people are desperate. They want answers, and when people are desperate, they do things that maybe, you know, aren't the best option. I don't know. I mean, for me, that Yeardon clip just looked like he was trying to cover his back. You know, like, you know, don't ever get me, mate. Like, I'm just trying to do what I can do. But that said, if I'm Yeardon and I'm being met with a load of angry fans, what am I going to say that's going to be different? You know, you have to look at it from both sides. I mean, it's got to the point, really, where I'm concerned this is just the start of it. And I have kind of real concerns about, you know, how this moves forward and in what way, because, you know, we're seeing people that are angry and frustrated. You know, it was a dismal evening for Reading fans. And that's the reaction to it. Now, you could argue that there's very little togetherness in that squad, because if it was me and I saw one of my teammates go over, I'd probably go and try and help him out. But no one came to do that either. So I don't think it's going to have a detrimental effect, because we can't get any worse, Ollie. That's the bottom line. You know, the fans have been in the stadium, you know, even when we've been not particularly good, even after the, you know, the kid amidst the game, which was the Fulham game, which was the, you know, supposed reaction to that. You know, fans were trying to support the players, end up losing 7-0. Same again with the Luton home game. You know, so we've travelled in numbers. You know, the fans have travelled in numbers. The fans that have turned up to the stadium have given, you know, the absolute best that they can give to those players, and that's not worked either. So, you know, sometimes a bit of tough love could potentially spark a bit of a revival. I don't think it will. I don't think anything will change, really. And you hit the nail on the head in the fact that people are angry. That's the bottom line. And it's very difficult to see at the moment a way out of this without sounding like a broken record. I don't know what changes will occur at the club now that will appease, you know, an ever-growing irate fan base. I really don't. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out on Saturday and again at home on next Tuesday. But it's a very, very difficult situation. And I don't see this getting better anytime soon, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree that it feels as if it is just the start. I mean, the last two games have been almost mirror images in terms of the post-match scenes. Obviously, no one was on the pitch on last night, but fans have vented their anger in differing ways after both the Coventry game and the Peterborough game. And as I say, I understand the anger. I think everybody understands the anger, and ultimately people want to show that they're unhappy, and rightfully so, because something does need to change. But as you say, that the more the losing streak goes on, and it does seem almost inevitable now that the Reading will, well, certainly not win a game, but it certainly seems they are on track to lose a lot of games between now and the end of the season, that anger will just continue to grow until something does change. And that leads us on to our next question from Josh, who says, we have a very short window to make some very big changes. That performance last night was one of the worst I've seen. We were lucky not to concede. How can the club turn it around from here? It looks unlikely we can turn things around. I think obviously the obvious one is to change the manager. I think, as I said, that is stating the blatant obvious, but you know that's been clear for some time now to almost everybody, apart from Dae Jong and Dae Jong Pang or whoever is making that decision to keep Paunovic in the job. You know, there are lots of changes that need to be made, but ultimately the immediate one that might just be able to spark some sort of change on the pitch. And I'm convinced at this point that it is a case of anyone but Veljko Paunovic. It doesn't matter really who it is. Obviously get a coach in, but it's got to be anyone other than Veljko Paunovic, because by all accounts the players have lost faith in him. And sometimes it just needs that change. I always think to the 17-18 season when Paul Clement replaced Jaap Stam. Now I think Jaap Stam is a much better manager than Paul Clement. But ultimately replacing Stam for Clement kept Reading up, because Clement won, I think, probably two games in the final 10 or 8 of that season. And yes, that's very poor, but Stam was on a run of one win in 18 before that. And Reading wouldn't have stayed up with Jaap Stam in the job. They replaced him with the worst manager, but they made that change, which was the key thing. And that spark played into life. You know, they won that first game under Paul Clement, that QPR game, which ultimately kept Reading up those 3 points, because Reading survived relegation by about 2 or 3 points that season. So winning that game, that spark that managerial change would have made kept Reading up. And it could be the case here that Reading just needs to make that change just to motivate those players to do something different around changing around the training ground, around match day, just to make that change. And hopefully something happens in that regard. And plenty of questions on Paunovic that I'll lump together here. Simon Latson says, do you think that in the fullness of time, we'll discover that Paunovic is the only person trying to hold the club together for survival, is battling internally within the club, and that he's being unfairly blamed for the present situation? And Ben Brenton says, I know a lot of people are calling for Pano to go, but is there any thought to who might replace him? Perhaps a lack of a decent replacement is why the board are keeping him in place. As I say, I personally think any replacement is better than Paunovic at the moment. We've got to that point where just change is needed. I don't want to try and make too many excuses for Paunovic, and I have done on many occasions, and I do actually feel incredibly sorry for him, because you look at him in his post-match interviews, it's just a complete look of despair and complete frustration that ultimately we're all feeling. You know, and if the rumours that he did offer to resign a few weeks ago and that was rejected, if those rumours are true, you know, then ultimately his hands are tied. So is there a sense, Adam, that this goes beyond Veljko Paunovic now, that there is, obviously he's well out of his depth on the pitch, he's taken Reading as far as he can go, but there is a degree of sympathy for him, because ultimately this issue goes way beyond whoever's in the dugout.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think that Paunovic should be removed from his position. I think I don't want to call him incompetent, because I don't think that's a nice word, really. But I can't really describe it as anything else. It's you know, it's quite clear that his situation has become untenable. He's tactically, it's so inept against Peterborough that it was just unbelievable. Really, it was just. There's absolutely nothing. There's no direction or anything, really. But 100%, I mean, you know, the issues go very deep. And I look at two figures here that probably haven't got as much criticism as they probably should have done, and probably haven't been subject of the heat as much as they should have done. And that's Dae Jong Pang and Mr. Dai. You know, I'm kind of begrudged now to call him Mr. Dai. I'll probably just call him Dae Jong from now on, because that was, I think, for me, not to remove him after Coventry City. I think that was just dangerous, to be honest. I think that was, you know, knowing that, you know, the reaction already, you know, to Paolo and him having to rush down the tunnel to keep him in place there. I think Dai is honestly hiding behind people, you know, and kind of using them as a human shield, really. And I think it's cowardly. I think, you know, he's completely, you know, just abdicated all of his responsibilities, really. You know, he needs to take tough decisions now. When we do need to take, we do need to make, you know, him to take tough decisions, he's kind of gone missing in action. So I think for me, he's, you know, one of the main reasons why we're in this situation. I think, you know, accountability starts right at the top. And I don't think he's been, well, really received enough criticism, really. And Dae Jong Pang, there's just, you know, there's absolutely nothing about him, really. You know, what does he do? You know, he doesn't speak to the fans. I think it, to me, he's just about as useful as a chocolate teapot, really, because there's just nothing about him, nothing going on. He doesn't communicate with the fans. There doesn't seem to be any direction at the club. And that's both of them put together. You know, it's not just on the CEO, it's the owner as well, who's supposed to be steering the ship, and they're not. So I think for me, those two, are the people that we need to start looking at a little bit more now, because those people have, they've not received enough criticism, really, for my like.
A few more thoughts on Dai Young from the mailbag. John Faulkner says, do we know if Dai speaks English well enough to get a message to him via media protests, etc.? I've never heard him, so I don't know. That's all our problems. Dai Young has never given a media interview, either in-house or to the wider media since he joined Reading. And John says, for all we know, he could be going off second-hand info. As far as we're aware, you know, from the message from the club is that Dai Young supposedly watches every game from China. Obviously, he was here for the Forest game before Christmas. Supposedly, he watches every game from China. Ben, you might be able to add a bit more info in terms of sort of how he gets his report. I think Dai Young Pang sort of reports back to him every week. Kyle Smith says, are we heading the same way as Beijing Ren and KSV Rosalair? Obviously, the two clubs that the Chinese owners owned previously. Rosalair was more Dai Zhu Li. Obviously, Beijing Ren was more Dai Young. And Kyle says, have the owners actually learned anything from their other failed projects? And Bobbin says, if Dai is unwilling to change tack in the immediate term, then would it be safe to assume that nothing will change until the end of the season? If the buck stops with Dai, why is he doing nothing now to stop our slide into League One? Nothing makes sense. Again, there's not an awful lot to add to that, really. And I think we're in this sort of strange catch-22 situation, really, with Dai Young, where personally, for me, and I know a lot of other fans feel the same, is that there's a real worry for Reading's future without Dai Young, because ultimately he's the man who owns the stadium. He's the man who owns the training ground. He's the man who is, you can't fault his willingness to invest. He's invested an awful lot of money into the football club, you know, too much money, because it's got us into FFP trouble. But he has kept the club afloat during a pandemic. And for that, there is lots to be thankful for. But the way he runs the club is amongst, you know, the worst examples I've ever seen in football. You know, the advice, or the people he takes advice from, the decisions he makes, his whole attitude towards the whole running of things. So we're in a really tricky situation, Ben, where we owe a lot to Dai Young, but ultimately he's also, you know, running the club into the ground at the moment.
Yeah, look, I mean, I can only go on my personal experiences. And they've all come about through stuff, in terms of the meetings and the Zoom calls and stuff that I've been part of. And I'm amazed it's taken this long for stuff to come out about Dai Young, if I'm honest. Pang, this is not the owner. The modern football is such that the owners nowadays don't need to know about football clubs. They just have the money, right? So they come in, as we all know, they write checks. If they're abroad, you know, they have someone in charge saying, right, we need this money this month, gets deposited into the account, and they move forward like that. But the successful clubs, you take Brentford, the guy, the owner doesn't ever talk to the fans ever. He doesn't want to engage with fans, quite happy to put the money in, rocks up to games, sits in his box, hat on, collar up, leaves straight away, that's it. But what he has done is put intelligent, sensible, forward-facing CEOs and people around the club to front up and go, this is the decision we're making because of this. And that's not, you know, that's always been the same, you know, really with Reading Football Club. I mean, I think in my experience of supporting them, obviously you've got, you know, Sir John, who I've been told never attended any kind of supporters trusts meetings or engaged with supporters formally, always informally, because he was always around and he was a face and he was a character and everyone liked him. Well, to a point anyway. But the most that I've seen from any owners that we've had were from the Thais, who made a real big PR push to try and get the club going. Some of that was ill-fated, obviously, with the flipping music video that they did, but they were pretty happy to engage with fans and seemingly quite happy to kind of hog the limelight. But the problem at the club now is that there is no one in that stadium, in that club, that can forward face. So it was Paunovic, and it has been Paunovic up until probably, you know, the kid amidst the game, where he was saying we're signing this player, doing this player. He was doing all the forward facing stuff. Dion hasn't done it. He won't do it. Else in that club right now that would be able to do it. That's the bottom line. Okay. That's a massive problem because, you know, they're not going to bring anyone suddenly in and go, right, we're in this situation. Can you come in and talk to fans or come in and kind of wrap up this in a PR term? They're clutching at straws. It's not thought out. You mentioned right at the top of the, you know, the show about the 20 grand being given away. I've not seen any announcement. I don't know anyone who's won that or any rumours of anyone winning that. Was that even real? Who knows? Did we dream it all? I don't know. But that comes directly after a statement which hasn't been written by Dai or Dai Young. It's been cobbled together. It's been thrown out. And, you know, people behind the club have taken flak for it. The problem is that that can't continue now because people are angry and people are annoyed. So, you know, having situations where we're asking Dai Young to now come out and talk to us, it's not going to happen. Having Dai, you know, come out and talk to us, it's not going to happen. If it hasn't happened to this point, it's not going to do it. And, you know, Star said this 4 or 5 weeks ago. We said one of the priorities, and everyone can go and check it out, is, we want the owner to talk to us. We want him to communicate. That's not happened. And it's not going to happen now. It's very, very simple. Nothing is going to change. And that's the biggest problem at the moment is that we're not going to move forward with the current situation. I honestly feel, you know, my issue really is that top office and how they're going to be able to get over the ill feeling from the fan base. You know, we're going to lose more fans in the summer. We've already lost a load of fans that have got season tickets but aren't coming back and are very clear they're not coming back. Rightly so. Why should they? What isn't it for them at the moment that's going to make them come back? And I don't see any short-term or long-term resolution. You know, we've said as a fan base, we've said on this podcast, we want to see medium-term plans, we want to see long-term plans, we want to see what our projection is. It's gone beyond that now because we're not even sure what happens, as Adam said earlier, 24 hours to 24 hours. The communication and the mixed messages and the lack of leadership really is just disastrous. And I'll end on a point that I made someone on Twitter today. Last week, the Wales tickets for the upcoming World Cup playoffs went on sale and it was a shambles. It was an absolute disaster. And within minutes, the CEO of the FAW was on all the social media channels interacting with fans saying, really sorry, apologise, it's a disaster, this is what we're going to do to fix it, right? And it doesn't solve the problem because it's happened, but what it does do is show an empathy with those supporters who want to go and watch their team play, whether that's national or club level, all right? We've got a CEO in place who just will not communicate at all. Even in meetings, he will say very little, and I know that from first-hand experience. And it's very, very difficult to move forward. And this is why I've said, you know, recently and before, I feel very sorry for those employees at the club because they are dealing with a situation that they can't come out and talk about because no one is going to throw their boss under the bus for fear of losing their job. But they cannot move things forward if it's blocked at the top level. That is my personal impression of what the situation is at the moment. And I feel very, very sorry for those people that are having to suffer this and they need that job because they have to pay their bills. As fans, we can rightly or wrongly walk away, but those people can't. And those are the people that I really, really feel for at the moment.
Let's end this discussion. There's some really good points made from both of you there. And I think it's a really valuable discussion to have. And, you know, as you say, Ben, we could go on for hours talking about the state of the club and behind the scenes. And it's definitely sort of reached a breaking point over the last week or so with these two results and what's happened in the aftermath. But a great question that we had from Matt Williams. He says, you can have one of these three leave tomorrow and replace with someone of your choosing. So you can pick either Berko Paunovic, Kia Jurabkin, or Dai Young Pang to leave tomorrow. Alex Everson said, can you add Dai Young to that list? Although that probably is too easy. I think everybody agreed that might be too easy. But some short answers. Adam first. Berko Paunovic, Kia Jurabkin, or Dai Young Pang, who are you getting rid of tomorrow?
Oh, I wish I had the Dai Young in there because I would have gone for him straight away, really. Just you know, because we're absolutely directionless at the top. And if you offered me a new owner tomorrow, then I'd take it, to be honest with you. You know, the grass isn't always greener, but, you know, the grass that we have right now just isn't green at all. So may as well just, take a chance and move on to another owner. But no one's going to buy us, are they, considering the current state that we're in? So, there's a fat chance, really, of that happening at the moment. If I had to get rid of Kia, I think I'd have to go with Belhanovic just for the short term, because I think it's an absolute necessity right now, to give us any real chance of remaining up. I think I kind of agree with Ben in the fact that, even a new manager now, it's not guaranteed that it's going to work. We might get a little bit of a bounce, but, with these players at the moment, I just don't know. I have no idea whether they're going to, have the bottle really to stay up and to fight. It's a sad one, really. But yeah, I'd get rid of Paunovic, but I'd have the other two out in the summer because, to be honest with you, I have to be honest, Paunovic, Kia, Pang and Dai, disastrous. All four of them, disaster, complete disaster. And if I was, if I had the choice, I'd change all four of them tomorrow. But unfortunately, that's not going to happen anytime soon. I just feel sorry for the fans and as Ben said, the employees. I know you said a short answer, but I had to give a very long one. But I'll let Ben do his verdict now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a stunning question, really. And when I saw that, I was like, that's a great one. Short term, what's going to have the biggest impact potentially? And that's getting rid of Paolo. I don't care, stick anyone you want in there. But, at least they've recognised, albeit too little too late probably, but we change management, we still get relegated. Takes a little bit of that toxicity out of the fan base. Only a very small bit, I might add, but it at least shows a little bit of willing. We keep sticking with Paolo and we're going to end up with the same results. The short answer is Paolo, because that hopefully will have the short-term impact. Completely agree with what Adam's saying. Long term, you want a clean house. It's got to be root and branch stuff. And whether or not that happens in the summer, I don't know. We've been promised these root and branch changes before, but we'll wait to see. But yeah, short term, it's got to be Paolo gone.
Yeah, I can't add much more to that. I'll make it a hat trick on Veljko Paunović, just as you say, for the short term impact. But yeah, obviously, in an ideal world, you get rid of all of them. Final question on the mailbag then from Josh, who says, I feel like even if we stay up this season, next season we are even more likely to go down due to the loss of practically the whole squad. Do you agree? I'll keep this one short. Yes, I think almost certainly. I think that's the really worrying thing, is that even if we do stay up this season, then next season is going to be just as difficult, if not more difficult. As Josh says, practically the whole squad going. We've got 13 senior players out of contract. Obviously, the five loanees going back to their club. So we actually only have 9 senior players contracted beyond the end of this season. And that includes Liam Moore, who's almost certainly out of the club, and George Puskas, who will be sold to Pisa if they go up to Serie A. So, yeah, and that's the worrying thing, as I say, that even if we do stay up this season, then the troubles and the struggles are certainly not over, and next season is going to be very difficult indeed. That's a nice positive note to end the mailbag on. Let's move on to news bites, where I'm afraid there's not an awful lot of positive news around the club either.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Usually it's the women's team and provide the highlights of the week in this section. But they also lost last weekend, a 4-1 loss to Brighton in the WSL last Sunday for Kenny Chambers' side. That ended Reading Women's 7-game unbeaten run and their 5-game winning run. But they are 6th in the WSL table. It's the international break in the WSL now, so no game for Reading Women this coming weekend. They play West Ham at home in about 10 days' time. So hopefully they can get back on track there. As we always say, they are the shining light at Reading Football Club at the moment, the women's side. So hopefully they can get back on track very quickly. The under-23s, they lost 3-1 to Derby County on Monday. They're actually now winless in 8 matches with 7 defeats in that run. So just one draw in 8 since the start of December. They are bottom of the Premier League 2, Division 2. Fortunately, there isn't a relegation in that division. So if they finish bottom, then we'll just go again next season. But yeah, not a great season for them either. They travel to Nottingham Forest next Monday. and the under-18s, a win for their match. So something positive on that front. They beat West Brom 2-0 in the under-18 Premier League last Saturday, and they sit ninth out of 14 teams in the under-18 Premier League, and they host Chelsea at Bearwood on Saturday. One other bit of news that we haven't talked about yet, Reading made a signing, bizarrely, on Tuesday, when we were all waiting for the announcement of Vukopanovic's sacking. Reading actually announced a new addition that came completely out of the blue. I actually, when I saw the notification, said welcome Brandon. I thought we'd signed Brandon Mason, the left-back we signed, we had on trial a few weeks ago. It was actually Brandon Barker, a left-winger, 25 years old, former Man City Academy winger, made one senior appearance for them in the FA Cup. He was most recently at Rangers, who he left at the end of January. He spent the second half of last season on loan at Oxford United. And also, he's got championship experience with Preston, who obviously Reading place on Saturday. He made 16 appearances for Preston in 2018-19. Didn't score a single goal, a little bit worryingly. But Adam, thoughts on this signing briefly, Brandon Barker, on a free to the end of the season?
I can't say that I'm jumping for joy. He hasn't got exactly the best pedigree, but you know, this is the market that we're working in right now with the FFP. I've got to back the boy, to be honest, because he's, you know, it's not his fault really that the club's in its current state. I back him and I hope he does well, and hopefully he brings us a little bit of directness and a little bit of speed that we've needed since, you know, Mo Barrow left, really. And I think we've been missing that. So it just really depends on his final product, really, as to whether he's a good signing or not. And I've heard that from Rangers fans and other fans that he doesn't like to track back, really. And with Baba Rahman's defensive fragilities, if he's playing on the left-hand side, then that kind of worries me a little bit. But it's one where we're going to have to wait and see. Hopefully, you know, it provides... Well, he's a free transfer, so I hope so. I hope he provides us with a bit of value for money. I think that's what we've been missing. You know, it doesn't exactly seem like a long-term signing. Perhaps it might be if it's successful. You know, perhaps we might even be able to sell him on for, you know, a little bit more if we extend his contract in the future and he, you know, does well. But yeah, it's not a signing that fills me with absolute joy, but, you know, hopefully he can prove people wrong. And, you know, he said in his interview that he's got a point to prove. So, it's one where we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, isn't it? You know, ultimately, if you're a free agent at this point in the season, then, you know, you're not going to be setting the world alight. But as you say, he's got a point to prove, and that's, you know, a theme amongst a lot of Reading signings this season, really. You know, Tom Ince as well on deadline day. You know, these players haven't been playing much football recently. You know, there's a reason why they are available. There's a reason why they are, you know, in Tom Ince's case, available for loan, or Brandon Barker's case, a free agent. They have got a point to prove, and hopefully that comes out and helps Reading. But, you know, and hopefully they are up for the battle of fighting to stay in the championship. And, you know, look, Tom Ince has made a pretty decent start to his Reading career. Obviously won the penalty against Bristol City last weekend. So I'd probably rather have seen maybe a free agent centre-back come in just for a bit more depth there. But if Brandon Barker goes and scores hat-trick at the weekend, then I'm not sure anyone's going to be complaining. As I say, Reading play Barker's former club, Preston, on Saturday. And that's where we'll head our thoughts now in the big match preview.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Yeah, Preston away at Deepdale on Saturday afternoon. Actually, Preston have gone actually quietly under the radar the last few weeks. I was looking at this earlier. I was surprised actually how well they've done the last couple of weeks. Obviously replaced Frankie McAvoy in the dugout in December, bringing in former Plymouth boss Ryan Lowe. Obviously quite highly rated Ryan Lowe in League One, did very well with Plymouth. And he's done very, very well with Preston since coming in. They are unbeaten in their last six games, Preston, and have got four clean sheets in a row. They've lost one of 11 league games since Lowe came in at the start of December. And since Ryan Lowe was appointed, only Huddersfield have picked up more points in the Championship than Preston. Ben, you know, we've spoken about it a lot, that almost defeats seem inevitable at this point. But can you see anything or any hope that Reading can get something out of this game?
Absolutely none. No, I you know, when Ryan Lowe joined Preston, I thought fair play, because he's someone that I've looked at for a long time. You know, done very, very well, you know, with Plymouth, and you know, really, really seems like he's got his head screwed on properly, and he's done really well for Preston. You know, they were in a bit of a malaise, weren't doing very well, and again, it's just another club around us, probably at our level, I would say, that have changed manager and have done really well. You know, they've had that new manager bounce, and that's continued, and he's gone on a really impressive run with very limited resources, with players that aren't going to stand out on the team sheet as being, you know, absolute superstars. So absolute credit to Preston and their decision making and bringing him in. You know, really, really well done to them. It's a cracking ground as well, Preston. If people listen to this, they've never been up, you'll have a good day, because it's you know, it's what I class as a proper football ground, really. So try and enjoy it if you can. But no, I don't see any positives coming out of that for us at all, really. Don't see us winning, don't see us drawing. And it's, you know, for me, it's just another loss in coming, really. You know, given, you know, our form and Preston's form and, you know, the kind of the mentality of our squad at the moment. So, yeah, nothing but a Preston win for me.
Yeah, there's a lot of established championship players in that Preston squad. They've signed an Archer on loan from Aston Villa, very, very exciting young forward in January. And he's got 3 goals in 6 games for Preston. So, as you say, Ben, no superstars, but ultimately a hard-working team who have come together and put together a very decent set of results and have become very, very hard to beat under Ryan Lowe. Adam, what changes can Reading make ahead of the weekend? Obviously, Junior Hoylett is back from suspension after missing the Peterborough game. Hopefully Josh Laurent is back. According to Bucko Panovich, he missed the Peterborough game with an ankle problem. Is it as simple as swapping those 2 players back in for the players that they came out for? So Danny Drinkwater, I think we can probably all agree, should not be starting on Saturday, and hopefully Josh Laurent can come back in for him. Yaku Mata obviously made his first start of the season after coming back with his knee injury against Peterborough. Obviously only 3 days between games, so potentially he's not quite ready to start 2 games in the space of 4 days, so maybe Junior Hoylett comes back in for him. But what can Bucko Panovich do to try and inspire something, Adam?
Not sure about Hoylett, but Drinkwater was toilet, so that's your little rhyme that I've got for you there. What can he do, apart from saying resign? I'm not 100% sure what he can do to inspire something. I mean, you know, case in point really was the Bristol City game. We obviously lost heavily against QPR, and then we've had a little period where we've, you know, been able to work on the training ground, and he's made a couple of changes where Drinkwater has come out, thank God. Things still haven't really changed. I mean, it was a little bit more of a positive performance. But still, it wasn't exactly sparkling, was it? That performance at Ashton Gate, it was just very underwhelming, really, as kind of as usual, really, as kind of our standard now. I mean, it's a difficult one, because I think whatever changes he makes, I think because we've got the manager in place, it just doesn't really have, it's kind of, it's, you know, ineptness, really, if it's a really even a word. I mean, you know, just so tactically inept that I don't think we're going to get anything out of the game, to be honest, regardless of the system or the changes that he makes, to be honest, you know, with so little direction and you know, the players out there, especially against Peterborough, just didn't know what to do. So, it's a really difficult one. I think I'd perhaps bring Tom McIntyre back in just to shake up that defence a little bit. I think, you know, fair play to Morrison and Holmes, they kept a clean sheet, but, you know, the guy, I'm not sure who it was, a Peterborough player, had an open goal, really. We should have lost, to be honest. The defence wasn't absolutely perfect. So I'll bring Tom McIntyre back in. Hopefully he can, you know, stay fit for the full 90 minutes. Hoylett, I think, has been reasonably decent, actually, since coming here. I think he's been a little bit underrated, to be honest. Perhaps there's space for him. I think he did let the team down last weekend. So has he really earned his place back in the starting lineup already? I'm not 100% sure, but, you know, there's definitely a case for him to be in there.
if Laurent is fully fit, then yeah, he definitely comes in for Drinkwater. For me, I think Deli Bashiru comes in for Drinkwater. If Deli Bashiru is fit as well, I think, you know, if even if Kian Levy was fit, I think I'd probably stick him in there, to be honest, because it just Drinkwater just wasn't really, yeah, he's playing at his own pace. He just wasn't at the races at all, to be honest. And I don't like to pick on one player because a lot of them were shocking, to be honest with you. And a lot of people wouldn't do this, but I think I'd replace Lucas Schau. I think it's his nature really to kind of strut around the pitch and stroll around the pitch, but it just annoyed me, I think, for some other reason, really, or in midweek. I think it was just a game where he had to do a bit more, and he just didn't. So I think I may bring in Jamari Clark, which, you know, I think would be a massive surprise if he was included in the starting 11. But yeah, I'm still quite upset really with Schau's performance. I think, you know, Carl Hines done more than enough. I think Baba Rahman's done more than enough to be in the 11. I don't think he'll make too many changes, to be honest with you, but maybe a couple, maybe McIntyre and Laurent if he's fit, maybe Hoyler even, and we'll be on our way to perhaps hopefully getting a point. I'm hoping for a point, to be honest, because I just don't think we'll get three. And to be honest, I don't think we'll even get a point, but we'll soon see on that one.
Let's go for some predictions then. I think I probably know which way all of these are heading. But Ben, what are you going for Preston against Reading on Saturday?
I'll go 2-0 on Preston. Don't see a scoring. I'd agree we're probably dropping Jow out just on that note. I mean, there's nothing to lose. Hoyler's got to come in anyway, right? Has to. Because otherwise there's no point to any of this. So he's got to come in. Stick Mate up top. You know, let him have a run around up there, see what he can do. You know, I'd like to go back on my earlier comment about the players not performing. I have to say, I thought Renamota and Mate were probably the better of the players last night. You know, Renamota just gets on with it, fantastic energy on him. But yeah, I mean, the only change I'd make is definitely bring Hoyle in. Play him other centre back, who cares? As long as he's on the pitch, it doesn't matter, right? Just give us all a bit of joy anyway. But yeah, no, it's Preston 2, Reading 0 for me.
Yeah, we haven't actually touched upon it much this episode, but it's great to have Yaki Mato back on that pitch. You know, obviously, clearly not 100% fit just yet, but still brings so much to the table in terms of his ability to get past a man down that right-hand side. A couple of, you know, brilliant bursts against Coventry last weekend and before laying off Tom Ince, who somehow didn't score. But he also did it quite early on against Peterborough last night. Just great to have that sort of ability in the team, and hopefully he'll be a massive player for the rest of the season. Adam, prediction for Preston at the weekend?
I'm feeling a Mate goal, but I'm also feeling I'm feeling that usual dread really of a loss. I think I'm going to go with a 2-1 to Preston, and to be honest, that might even be perhaps optimistic that we're going to get on the score sheet and that we're only going to concede two. But we'll soon see on this one. I mean, you know, two sides that with varying stability on the pitch. I mean, Preston, obviously they suffered a bereavement earlier in the campaign. Obviously, condolences to them, you know, with their owner. But yeah, I think you know, the stability, you know, off the pitch will determine the result on it. And I'm going to go with a 2-1 Preston on this one.
I'm going to go for another hat trick. I'm going to go 2-0 to Preston, like you, Ben. I for some reason I went for a Reading win against Peterborough. Don't ask me why. So I've learned from that mistake, and I'm not sure I predict a win. Certainly with Veljko Banovic in charge, I will not be predicting a win in the very near future. But that just about draws to a close episode 290 of the Tireless Den podcast. It's been quite the ride looking back on the last 7 days. Hopefully you've enjoyed and agreed with a lot of the points that we've made. Ultimately, these are opinions, but I think everyone is on the same page right now that the club is just in an utter shambles. So all is left for me to say, thank you very much, Adam, for joining me.
No, thank you. Absolute pleasure. This was like therapy for me. So yeah, it's all good.
Very much so. And thank you, Ben, as well.
Yeah, no problem at all. Hope everyone stays safe to tomorrow, with the storm coming. That's off the pitch and away from the club, by the way. And also, you know, best of luck to everyone travelling up to Preston on Saturday, and you know, try and have a good day.
Lovely stuff. And of course, thank you as well for listening at home. It's always a pleasure to have you with us, despite results and performances not getting any better. So who knows what the next week will bring. Will Reading win again? Will Veljko Panovic get sacked? We can only hope on both of those things. Come on, you Ars.
smile. Funny